Welcome to Christ, Culture, and Cinema with the Dr. Jeffrey Skopak and his trusted assistant, Michael Popp, as they explore the intersection of faith, movies, and our contemporary context.
Welcome back to Christ, Culture, and Cinema. How are you doing today, Michael?
Well, it's getting a little warmer each day. I like it.
Yeah, spring has sprung. You know, out here in the mountains, the one thing I have learned is they have rain, and lots of rain. The old slogan of April showers bring May flowers better be real, because if it doesn't stop raining soon, I'm going to lose my mind out here.
Just like being in Arizona, right?
Yeah, oh, sure. This is the contrarian Arizona, that is for sure. Yeah, we've had nothing but rain, it seems, on and off, and waves and buckets of it. So the only good thing is everything's greening up real fast. So we're turning back into the beautiful mountains.
I'm going to assume the rain is keeping your golf courses pretty empty because you've got the rain gear, so you don't care.
Oh, yeah. I'm hardcore, man. I go out there. I got the rain suit, got the rain gloves, got it all ready to go. Got to have the right equipment for the sport, you know, so I'm ready to go on all that. Which brings us to a very interesting movie we're going to do today, because it did involve a lot of equipment, so to speak, a lot of trips to the hobby shop
very
by the main
good.
Character, a lot of camera equipment and the like. The movie, Welcome to Marwen, came out December 21st, 2018. And as we like to say on Christ, Culture, and Cinema, when a movie is released this late in the year, sometimes they think they might have possibilities to woo the Academy for a possible award. That wasn't the case with this movie. In fact, this movie did not do well at the box office. It cost somewhere between $39 to $50 million. Brought a box office return of $13.1 million.
Not good.
That's not good.
Threshold over Christmas, not good.
That's downright bad. A Christmas release not even covering cost is never, ever a good thing. Now, what's shocking is that this is directed by Robert Zemeckis, who is known for big movies, creative movies.
Like the greatest Christmas movie ever made.
Would you like to utter the words of that movie?
I just, you know, I am all in on the railroad, Polar Express. I'm all in on the Polar Express. I think it's a great movie, but I know you have different opinions on the Polar Express.
Yeah,
that's why
well,
I think
you know, he started dabbling in that stuff, Polar Express, Beowulf, etc. But, you know, let's not forget, once upon a time, he directed Romancing the Stone, which was a huge, you know, 80s kind of summer movie. He did Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which was enormous, and bringing animation and live action together. He did Back to the Future 1 and 3. I mean, two of the biggest movies.
Early on, he went through that that early on, just boom, boom, boom. I mean, he did all three of the Polar Expresses, Polar Express, Back to the Futures.
Back to the Future, yeah.
But he was huge. Yeah, he was huge in the 80s.
And let's not forget, Forrest Gump. Castaway, yeah. When he got hooked up with Tom Hanks. It's like, this guy was big movie. I mean, he's, you know, it's what he was. And this one, didn't deliver.
Not so good.
But let's talk about the cast. I like the cast in this movie. I like the movie. Playing the main character, Mark Hogenkamp, acted by Steve Carell. We know Steve Carell from The Office. He'll always be Michael Scott. But let's not forget his comedies. the 40-year-old virgin, Anchorman 1 and 2, a movie we covered here, The Big Short, great dramatic role in that movie. We just had him in Minions a couple of weeks back because he's Gru in the whole Despicable Me series, voicing that character. He's just really a fine comedic actor. It's what he is.
You know, leading up to this Welcome to Merwin, you know, he's obviously trying to break away from his character on The Office because Michael Scott is well known. So he did not just Despicable Me and The Big Short, but we saw Donald Rumsfeld in Vice. He did an excellent job.
Yeah.
And of course, he played Bobby Riggs in The Battle of the Sexes. So he was trying to break out and taking on a true story, biography, so to speak, of somebody like this. This was probably one of his challenges. It just wasn't a good financial decision.
It just didn't pan out. Now, playing Nicole in the movie is Leslie Mann. We know her from This Is 40, Knocked Up, 17 Again. George of the Jungle, that's going into the Wayback Machine a little bit.
Wayback.
Big Daddy, that was with Adam Sandler, I believe. And Cable Guy. She's been in a lot of those older comic movies. Again, a comic type of actress playing with the comic guy, Steve Carell. And yet this is not a comedy. So why do I get the feel like this is a movie people were trying to reinvent their career or jump the curb into something different? Roberta, played by Merritt Weaver. We know her from the show Nurse Jackie. Unbelievable. And this is where she had a string. NCIS, The Walking Dead. These are all huge, huge episodic cable shows or television shows. Maybe she's trying to jump into a different genre, and Welcome to Merwin would be the vehicle to get her there. Just I don't know. I mean, that's what I'm, at least that's what I'm sensing. Playing Julie, who is the social worker in the movie, is Janelle Monáe. Now, we've had Janelle Monáe in Hidden Figures, and she's brilliant in Hidden Figures. She's also been in The Glass Onion, The Knives Out Tale, and Knives Out. And we had both of those movies here on Christ Culture and Cinema. And she was a voice in Lady and the Tramp. But again, she's trying to get into a diversified cinematic roles. Because she was coming out of the music industry. So again, it's a different type of actress in this movie. Let's talk about some more of these. Carlala is played by Eliza Gonzalez. Again, Godzilla versus King Kong, From Dusk Till Dawn, Baby Driver. So again, these are not huge movies. Godzilla King Kong was kind of a huge movie, but, you know, I don't think it was that huge of a movie. We're seeing some very different actors and actresses in this movie. And again, notice more women than men, because that plays into the whole story. Anna is played by Gwendolyn Christie. Now, Gwendolyn Christie, we know, Game of Thrones. She's in the cable series Wednesday, which was enormous and is coming out with season two. She's in the Hunger Games, Mockingjay. She's in the Addams Family. She's in the last three of Star Wars, Star Wars, The Force Awakens, and the second one of that as well. A very tall actress. Again, looking for different types of roles, not just being typecast as the tall actress kind of thing.
Well, the fact she was in Star Wars, Game of Thrones, and Hunger Games, she's big time.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Some big ones.
For sure. Suzette is played by Leslie Zemeckis, the director's wife. Now, she has some very Very interesting movie choices. Bound by Flesh, Restless Souls, Jailbait. And then I'll back off. She voices in The Polar Express and Beowulf, but she seems to pick movies where there's a maybe a sexualized undertone to the movie.
Are you saying she has a figure for TV?
She just might. I don't know. No, I'm not going to go there.
She was in an episode of Beverly Hills 90210 back in the day, 1993. Mm-hmm. Give her that one.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to see she's Leslie Harder early on. Then in some of the more HBO Cinemax type movies, she's Leslie Lindsay. Mm-hmm. Then she must marry the husband, because all of a sudden she's names changed and she's doing Polar Express and Beowulf and all those. So
right.
Must have been a, hey, there's my new hubby. I don't have to worry about taking my clothes off in front of the camera anymore.
I could very well be. I'm not sure. Now, playing Kurt is Neil Jackson. We know him from Blade and Blade Trinity, but he's also been in some, again, episodic type of stuff. Upstairs, Downstairs, Stargate, and then a couple of big movies. The King's Man, which is the prequel to The Kingsman, and Alexander, which was a fairly large movie that didn't do necessarily well in the early 2000s. But again, you know, here's another one of these actors that finds some big roles in some big places. Larry is played by Eric Keenleyside. And I love some of his things. Married by Mistake. He goes all the way back to the original Twilight Zone, which is crazy to think about. He was in the reboot movie with Dwayne The Rock Johnson, Walking Tall. He was in A Beautiful Place to Die. And he was in Agent Cody Banks. Remember that movie? Came out late 90s, I believe, Agent Cody Banks.
A little while ago.
And I got two more. I have playing Mark Hogan Camp's counsel, Demarius Johnson, the prosecuting attorney, Conrad Coates, Love by Accident, Sky Rumors, The Sentinel. He was in the Tron Legacy. And most recently, he's been in the, I think it's on Amazon, the Jack Ryan series with John Krasinski. That's really, really good. If you like that kind of stuff, excellent. Well done. And then I have Judge Martha Harter, played by Vina Sode. And again, go back into the Wayback Machine a little bit. She was in The X-Files, Once Upon a Time, long-running series. She was in Time Cop. She was a voice in the movie Paw Patrol, the cartoon. She was in The Big Year, which I think is the only movie ever made about birding. And in that is... one of the Wilson brothers, I believe, is in that movie, and she's in Compulsion. Give you an idea of some of the things that Vina Sode has been in. But let's talk about the movie. It's an interesting movie. Like we said, this one didn't do well, but I would encourage you to give it a watch. The movie kind of opens up with these action figures slash dolls acting out in front of you. So you're not really sure what the movie's going to be right away. But it's a P-40 warplane pilot who has to ditch his plane. The plane crashes, and there's photography of these things going on in front of you. In the crash landing, his shoes get burned up, and he finds a pair of women's shoes. So this G.I. Joe-like action figure is walking around in women's shoes. He comes across these Germans who threaten to emasculate him, because here's this American war pilot wearing women's shoes. And there are a group of women, doll women, who come to the pilot's rescue and protects him. That's kind of how the movie opens up. And that's where we meet Mark Hogenkamp. And Mark Hogenkamp has created this place called Marwyn. And he has all these action figures and dolls and very elaborate sets and buildings and vehicles where he's carrying out this lead doll's life. Captain Hoagie is what he goes by. And what you realize is that he's kind of living out a fantasy life through these dolls and the pictures and photographs he takes. He frequents a hobby store where he meets, I believe, who is it that he meets in the hobby store? Is it Suzette? That's the hobby store worker, Michael. I know it's one of these gals we mentioned here. But the point is, as he's taking these pictures and the like, you realize he's dealing with personal trauma. And as the movie unfolds, you discover he was in a bar where he drank too much one night and began to blather about the fact that he likes to cross-dress. He likes to put on women's clothing. Problem is, he tells this to a bunch of white supremacists who decide his life isn't worth it, and they beat him near death. And he, that being Mark Hogenkamp, is recovering from this physical trauma, emotional trauma, and dare I say, even spiritual trauma. He is immersed in what our culture labels post-traumatic stress disorder. Back in the old days of war, they would have called it shell shock. The reality is this: he's afraid of life. And so he's created a fantasy world, this world of Marwyn, where he carries out his life. The problem is, the people around him really don't understand why he does what he does. Nobody really understands the complexity of Marwyn, the intricacies of the characters, and how, as various things happen in his life, he moves it into Marwyn, into Captain Hoagie's life, and carries this out by portraying it and photographing it. What were you going to add, Michael?
I don't think he understood necessarily why he does the things he does. You know, he mentioned wearing heels because it makes him feel closer to dames. He loves dames and those things. But let's be honest. I mean, if he understood why he did what he did, it might not have happened.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's kind of crazy. To think this is how he's processing his pain. But that's exactly what he's doing in this movie. And this, to me, is our real simple bridge to walk across from the big screen to the culture of which we live. We don't know each other's stories very well. In fact, I would dare say we hardly know each other's stories, if at all. That you don't know the personal traumas, the hurts, the things that have molded and shaped an individual to who they are. We don't necessarily understand their behaviors and what triggers and motivates those behaviors. It's incredible. To kind of peel back the layers. And that's what this movie does, because you see him contending with his trauma through action figures and dolls in a make-believe world. You know, a good example of this is when he falls in love with a woman, and it was Nicole, Leslie Mann, who moves in next door. And he really does love her, but he has so much trauma that when he finally expresses the love, it's rebuffed. And what does he do? He takes that trauma and he translates it over to Marwyn, to Captain Hoagie. And it's really funny. In his fantasies, Nicole, the neighbor, is shot by a Nazi who in turn is killed by Captain Hoagie, but brought back to life along with other Nazi soldiers. And Captain Hoagie realizes that this Nazi spy and all this that's bringing this all about are actually hurting him. That he starts seeing things in his community through these action figures. And it's all because he's yet to deal with the root trauma of nearly being beaten to death by these neo-Nazis. And there's that sub story of the prosecuting attorney encouraging him to give his impact statement to the judge, which he finally builds up enough courage to do. And, you know, maybe it's living life through the world of Marwyn that he finds that courage. Where do people muster courage when they carry around so much personal hurt and trauma? I think that this movie asks that question, and it gives you one example of answering it through, through Mark Hogan Camp's character. But you and I deal with people in trauma every day, and we live in a world with people with trauma and hurt every day. How do you help peel back the layers of life's onion to kind of get to the root causes, the root hurts, the real pains? I mean, what are your thoughts on that, Michael?
Yeah, we live in a sinful world. People do dumb things for reasons they don't understand. Things can be triggered. I mean, unfortunately, you and I have seen people at their worst. And in this situation, I was actually reading some reviews where people were struggling with the fact that he was drinking with the people that attacked him. He was, you know, he was drinking and was talking about what he liked, and all of a sudden it caused this rage. And would we be more upset if it was random strangers or somebody that got to know him? And do we really understand why people do what they do sometimes? You know, it's scary. I don't know. This movie is just one of those reminders that we live in a world where we have to be careful and make sure we know what's going around us. And you and I would not be in a bar drinking by ourselves, you know, getting to know people probably, you know, if right. We go with somebody, or we'd probably have a drink at home. But how do we understand that? The fact is, my grandpa's generation, all the issues they saw in war, they didn't have the help they have nowadays. You know, where are people getting help for their issues, where they're escaping reality, you know? So It's a real movie. It was well done for what they were trying to do. But I think the numbers, the box office shows, people use movies to get an escape, not to see how screwed up our world is.
Yeah. And this movie really brings it front and center of how do you love people right where they are? You know, this is a kind of a, you know, here's your Jesus crossover for sure. You know, Jesus, when he encountered people, he knew exactly what was going on in their lives. He's like a laser. You know, he cuts right to the point. Zacchaeus up in the tree. Zacchaeus, come on down. I'm going to your house. We're going to hang out. We're going to talk about life. Matthew at the tax collector's booth. Matthew, leave it behind. Come follow me. That's what I want you to do. And on and on and on. You know, you start seeing these interactions where Jesus accepts people right where they are and begins ministry from that point. And all too often, I think, in the church, we spend so much time trying to get people to be to a certain point before we really receive them and accept them. We got to accept people right where they are, with their hurts, with their traumas, with their baggage, with their opinions, with their stuff, and let the Word of God work in and on and through them, not forcing it on top of them to conform before we make one step beyond that moment.
Right.
The church needs to be way more receptive. Like in it's it's funny, the one that's in the hobby store is Roberta. She accepts, you know, Mark right from the beginning of the movie. She just does. She loves him. And you know, at the end, they do get together. That's the one he really needs, because she accepts him for who he is, right where he is, with his hurt, with his trauma, with his world of Marwyn, of by which he works things out. And unfortunately, I would say sometimes we in the church are more like those people in the bar who beat him up because he doesn't conform.
Right.
You know, and I really do believe this is an important movie, because you're right. We go to movies to escape reality, and this movie comes painfully close to so many people's realities. You know, maybe we're not cross-dressing and going to a bar alone and drinking and telling the wrong people what's going on in our lives. But we have a lot of stuff we just keep packed away that the world should not see and nobody should know anything about. And wouldn't it be a much healthier place if we are able to carry each other's burdens? You know, this is kind of that, you know, when Jesus says, my yoke is easy and my burden is light. You know, lean it on the Lord and lean it on each other. We carry each other's loads instead of criticizing and adding on to each other's loads. I think that's a very, very important point this particular movie tried to make. I really wish it did better in the box office. I'm not saying we need to make more movies like this, but I think this is an important movie because it gives voice to a world that's hurting and shows that there can be light and salt when others come around and bless and assist each other. You know, the thing that's powerful about this movie, Michael, is at the very end, you know, as it's wrapping up, they show you the real Mark Hogan camp. This is based on a real story, a true story. And he does, he does end being a very successful photographer, because the work he does is incredible, because he's paying so much attention to the detail as he plays this out in his make-believe world of Marwyn, that it's incredible. Absolutely incredible. Anything you want to add to that, Michael?
Yeah, I agree. I was surprised in IMDb reading the reviews. Most of them are very positive.
Oh, yeah.
A few people thought Zemeckis was off his rocker, and there's a few bad ones, but most are very positive, but not with the pocketbook. You know, and again, we've already hit that, but it's, it's almost close to, one of them actually said, it makes me want to watch the documentary it's based on more than the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Which I think leads us to our question of the day. When you think about your own life, what's the baggage that you're carting around that you don't want the world to see? And what are the vehicles you're using to handle, to cope, and to carry those things so that the world doesn't see it? And if you had the opportunity, where would you unburden it? How would you relieve yourself of it? How would you invite others into your life in a more intimate way, into your kind of own personal Marwyn, so that they could better see, better bless, and better assist you in your walk of life? This was a good movie. Check it out, people. It's not a hard watch. I think this movie really does move along quite nicely, and I think you'll get something very positive out of it. And good for Steve Carell for taking this risk. Didn't pan out in the box office, but I still think it was worth making. Now, if you're enjoying Christ Culture and Cinema, consider leaving a rating, a review. Of course, share the podcast with others to join the movie journey with us. Don't forget the book, Christ Culture and Cinema, How Faith and Film Intersect, under my last name, Skopak, and you can find that on Amazon. Now, next time, Michael, we need a little comic relief.
We do.
And you know, I moved up here to North Carolina. I'm living in the heartland of the NASCAR world. You know, right up the street from me is Bristol. You know, we have a church in Bristol, Tennessee. That's all of about an hour and a half north of me here in Asheville. And let's not forget, we have another super speedway over there in Charlotte. So I thought, you know, we need to laugh again. We need to have some comedy. And next time.
Days of Thunder?
No. We're gonna go to the finest NASCAR movie ever made.
Oh boy.
Ever made. We're gonna do Talladega Nights, the ballad of Ricky Bobby. Until next time. Well, if you're not first, you're last. We'll see you at the movies.
Thank you for joining us for Christ, Culture, and Cinema with the Dr. Jeffrey Skopak and his assistant, Michael Popp. Until next time, we'll see you at the movies.